discussion here on Sunday morning because I have so aptly avoided doing this in all the time that I've been here. I know I don't look like a shy person and I may not act like a shy person, but I'm a shy person. So what I want you to know is how grateful I am. I'm so grateful to have a chance to reflect on my time here in Luke. But I also want to share with you how I got here, because my journey to this place shaped my work at this place. When Rev Emily suggested a title, because I couldn't come up with anything creative, she suggested this little light of mine, and I thought that is perfect. I loved that hymn as a kid. I can't tell you where I learned it. It certainly wasn't in church, maybe it was at Brownies. But I loved the idea of letting my light shine. Maybe because in my young, naive heart, I already knew that an inner light is something that's very important. You know, I didn't grow up going to church. My family was in the carnival business, and we didn't do church. So I had no Sunday school images of God or Jesus that sort of were set into my mind. It meant that I was free to imagine God in ways that made sense to me. And I imagine, because I color way outside the lines, I imagined God as light for as long as I can remember. Whenever I looked up at the night sky, full of stars, there was God, everywhere, all around me. It wasn't until grade school, when my friends told me about the real God. You know, the God that's grandpa and lives in the clouds. My idea of God as life was challenged, and I wasn't going to take it sitting down. When I expressed my doubts to my friends, they assured me that they were right, because they went to Sunday school. I didn't have a leg to stand on. I wish that I had been familiar with the Gospel of Thomas back then, and I could have, you know, rhymed off a smart little quote about being the light, but I didn't have that yet. We didn't go to church, but that doesn't mean I had never been to one. I have two very vivid memories as a child of experiencing church. Now, the first was at my father's church. My parents were divorced, and I didn't live with my father, so I didn't get a chance to go to church with him very often. But the couple of times that I did, I can tell you that it was a little terrifying. My dad is a Baptist, and there was a lot of talk about sin and being saved and needing to come up and be saved, and it was a little scary for a five-year-old. And my second experience was with my Auntie Rachel at a Catholic church in Pierrefonds, Quebec. I was absolutely mesmerized by the music and the beauty of the church. I have to admit that the image of Jesus crucified, when you don't have any context, you know, in your store of knowledge, I was perplexed. I have to say, I wondered, what did he do to end up there? And I really hope I don't do that. And I was overwhelmed by a sense by the rituals in the Catholic Church, because they left me feeling very much like an outsider. It was like it was a club that I couldn't belong to. These experiences didn't affirm my early imaginings about God, and I began to doubt my earliest beliefs of God as light and as God being part of me. So I just moved away a little bit from that idea. I didn't trust myself. Now, I didn't experience church again until I was in my late 20s. I had met and married John, and we were living here in Leaside, and we had just had our first baby, Michaela. And I knew that it was really important to John to have her baptized. I figured there was no harm in that. It was like fire insurance to me. So we connected with Reverend Ron Nickel. He's a United Church minister out of Lansing United Church. And interestingly, I knew Ron from my childhood. He was the chaplain at the Showman's League Club that my parents belonged to. And Ron married John and I. He performed the ceremony in 87 at Lansing United. So I had this connection with the United Church. So we went and we spoke to Ron, and he agreed to baptize Michaela. And it was at Michaela's baptism that I had an absolutely transformative experience in church. I remember standing by that baptismal font, not knowing that it was called a font, and I can still remember Ron holding our baby, and baptizing her. And I remember looking out at this congregation of complete strangers who I didn't know, and they were promising to love her and cherish her and to hold our family in their hearts. This complete group of strange people were welcoming us into their community of faith, no questions asked. I have to tell you, my mind was blown. It felt like home. Like that little light inside was real, and that for months somebody could see it. And I began to wonder if maybe this was a faith group that had space for someone like me, that had space for my questions and my constant desire to push boundaries and color inside the line. Now, Reg Nickel, he was a very smart guy. He knew, I gotta get a drink of water, sorry. He knew, Ron knew, that the chances of a young couple like John and I, with a new baby, attending church that was a good 15-20 minute drive away, was slim. And he also knew that we lived in Leaside. So he suggested that John and I start attending church here at Leaside United. I didn't want to. I didn't know anyone here. I knew Ron. I knew my experience at Lansing United was lovely. How could I believe that all United churches would be the same? I didn't. But I took a leap of faith, and we started coming to Leaside United Church. Now, I want to be clear. It was not easy. We didn't come dancing in here and feel like, oh, I know what's going on. It was awkward for me. Much easier for John. He grew up going to church. But for me, it was like a third language. I didn't understand the mechanics of church. I wasn't familiar with songs and hymns. I didn't even know how to work the hymn books or what VB meant. And I didn't know. I never knew when to stand, or if I should be sitting, or why that plate was passed around every week. I mean, I knew the money was supposed to go into the plate. I knew it was a collection. But I didn't know why. I didn't know what it was for. I thought it was like membership fees. I had no idea how things worked. In fact, Chris being here today reminds me that the passing of the peace story, which is our favorite story that we share. And one of the earliest services that I came here, there was passing of the peace. I had no idea what that was, and it happened to be Easter. So I went around wishing everybody happy Easter. And then John explained to me that you're supposed to say peace be with you, and they say also with you, and I felt foolish. But Chris took that foolish feeling away from me by always saying happy Easter at every passing of the peace. Thank you. So here I was. I was 28 years old. I had a new baby. And I felt like a toddler. I felt like an infant who was learning how to walk and talk the language of church. But we stuck it out. We kept coming. And thanks to wonderful people like Jean Malabar and Chris Anderson and Karen Hume, they got me involved. I started teaching Sunday school. Right? I knew nothing and they let me do Sunday school. Here's a fun fact. If you know nothing about God, teach little children. You will learn so much. It's a wonderful opportunity. I joined the Christian Education Committee, or the CE Committee, as we called it, and I started to get to know this community. And I was here a lot. I started working downstairs at Mrs. Park's. I was teaching. I was teaching there until I was getting this weird feeling that I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. Now, it's really hard to describe to somebody else a call. But that is what Rev. John suggested I was experiencing. I loved teaching at Mrs. Park's. And I had just come through a really difficult struggle with postpartum depression. And I was just starting to get my groove back. So feeling discontent and unsettled in a job that I actually liked didn't make sense to me. Rev. John told me that these feelings were probably not going to go away, not what I wanted to hear. And he suggested that I try listening to what the Spirit was trying to tell me. I tried to tell him that I was neither interested nor planning on answering any calls, but with a wise smile, Rev. John took a post-it note. He wrote, "Be quiet and listen," and he handed it to me. He told me to go home, put it on my bathroom mirror. I thought it was kind of rude, but I did it anyways. And while I was wrestling with that call, Leaside United Church had a joint needs committee that was exploring Luke's needs. We were trying to look for a replacement for Rev. David Bruce. And eventually, they posted a job. They were looking for someone who would create an engaging children's program that would provide a space for youth to come and meet and find someone who could connect families, youth and children, in other aspects of the church. When I read that posting, it was like a lightning bolt hit me. I was, whoa, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I understood what it was like to be new. I knew how hard it was to balance work, family, and try and get motivated enough to show up for church on Sunday. I had kids in that age group of 12, 17, and 19 years old, and I knew that the only way to keep them here, to keep them engaged, was to make them feel connected in a real way. And my friends and family were really confused when I told them that I wanted to apply for this position, but they supported me 100%, like they always do. And I'm not sure how many people applied for that job, but I can almost guarantee that they were all more qualified than I was in terms of theology and church knowledge. I don't really remember much about the interview other than I spoke from my heart. I just let my own experiences speak for me. And I got the job, obviously. It's nearly a minute. And I registered quickly at Emmanuel College and started studies there. I was in the Master's of Pastoral Care program, and it was terrifying. I have ADHD, I have an LD. I had no idea what I was doing. I cried every time I had to write a paper. I had panic attacks, but I loved it. I started reading different theologians and theories, and I couldn't get enough of it. It was fabulous. I knew that I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. When I started here, my goal was to create a feeling of welcome and inclusiveness for families and children and youth. I wanted to find ways that would foster connections, because I believe that when families have a connection to a faith community, doesn't have to be this one, but a faith community, I think they have an incredible advantage, especially when times get tough. Unfortunately, I have experience with that. John was diagnosed about 5 years ago. He's okay, in case you don't know him, he's fine. He was diagnosed with cancer, and our lives were turned upside down, crazy upside down. We were shocked and scared and angry and sad, sometimes all at once on the same day. And everyone deals with this kind of news differently. And I can tell you, as a parent, it is impossible to manage your own avalanche of feelings that comes with that kind of news and still provide support for your family and care for them. So I'm forever thankful for the love and care that this community gave to our family during those crazy years. David and Michaela and Adriana, they witnessed countless acts of kindness day after day, week after week. They had more cookies and lasagna than they knew what to do with. And more importantly, though, they knew that they weren't alone. And while that didn't make John's illness any less scary, they didn't feel alone or isolated. Another interesting thing is that our family was able to talk openly about our fears. We had a language to work with. You see, we were experienced with people in our community getting sick or dying because we're part of this amazing multi-generational community. So they had a framework to work with. And as for me, I never felt more loved. On really bad days, I would close my eyes and I would just imagine this amazing pool of light scooping us up and holding us. And it got me through the worst. It made me feel calm. It took away my fears. It wasn't because I thought I knew for sure that John was going to get better, because cancer has its own agenda. And you just don't know. And we were lucky. He did get better. But here's what I knew. I knew that whatever happened, we would be okay as a family, because we have the love and support of a wider community. So that's why I think there is a place for faith communities for our families. When I think back, I realize that out of the three kids, Adri, at 16, was probably the luckiest. She was part of the youth group, and it was an amazing support to her. They got her through some really tough times. And even to this day, they remain close. She's in Kingston, actually, today with Annie Kelly. You see, youth, they're programmed to create relationships with their peers. It's the way for them to move forward towards independence. They have to do this. They need to learn how to separate from their families. So a faith-based youth group, like we have here at Lucy, that provides a space for them, a space that is safe, where they can question, they can share their beliefs, they can share their doubts with no fear of being laughed at. If we want to see our young people stay involved in our faith communities, we need to make sure that they have opportunities for their voices to be heard. Lots of them. I urge you to get to know the young people here. Learn their names. Talk to them about school. Ask their opinions about current events. They are brilliant sparks of light, and they're just looking for a place to shine. Now, personally, I have the youth to thank for my involvement with the affirming process. It was through lots of open, honest discussions and them educating me that I began to realize the importance of creating safe spaces for people who identify as LGBTQ. You know, creating a safe space, it is more than just physical. It goes far beyond any rainbow flags and stickers. A safe space means that we are willing to affirm every single person who comes through these doors. We affirm that the light within them is the same light that is at the heart of all life. Julian of Norwich, a 14th century Christian mystic, I read him this week, he wrote, "We are not just made by God, we are made of God, born from the very womb of the divine." Isn't that an awesome phrase? Born from the very womb of the divine. It makes me think of the Big Bang, of this mass darkness that suddenly explodes with light. And that light is in each of us. It enters every space, every nook, and every cranny, and takes away that darkness. It made me think of a YouTube video that I watched earlier this week. I came on Tuesday to the Tuesday on Sunday work. You should really check that out in the fall if it's still happening. And we were talking about this upcoming service, and I was sharing that I was going to talk about light, my little light. And Michelle asked me if I had seen the video by a spoken word artist called Prince E.A. I hadn't, so of course I went home and checked it out. Now, Prince E.A. was comparing light bulbs to people. Not in a spiritual sense. He was using it as a sort of a launching point to talk about racism and bigotry. But I think it applies in a very spiritual sense. He pointed out that like people, there are many types of light bulbs, many types of lights. Some are bright, some are dim, some are broken. They come in different shapes and sizes. Some are long, skinny, short, and fat. They're made all over the world in different places. But at the very core, there is one current running through them. And in the same way, there is a singular energy running through each person on planet. So it doesn't matter what you look like on the outside. It doesn't matter what color you are, your size, your gender. Who you are is energy, the intelligent energy that gives life to your body. I will go on to say, you are the light of God that lives deep within your body and in every single other person. Sounds like God to me anyways, but I'll leave that to you. I'm going to end with a poem by Steve Taylor. I stumbled upon him when somebody suggested that I try meditating. You ever see that person with ADHD meditate? Yeah. Anyway, I tried. But I'm going to share this poem, and I also want to say, at the end of the service, I invite everyone to, every family to come and take a little piece of light. Let it shine. Hang it in your windows. Let it be a reminder that the light of God is in each of us and that it's to share. I have it in our arms. It's called The Light. I saw the light burst across the sky like a flower opening behind the clouds, and the whole world was flushed with harmony, shimmering like the sea at dawn. I saw the light glow inside my mind, seeping through the darkness of inner space at a certain point of stillness, like a pool of pure white water. I saw the light shine through my baby's eyes, two crystals gleaming with unconditional love straight from the universe's golden core, all emanating, all embracing the light of life itself.